Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division III Podcast. I'm Zach Babbo. We're more than halfway through the season, and a few teams have separated themselves from the pack, particularly undefeated Cabrini, undefeated Denison, and one-loss squad Salisbury and defending champion Stevenson. But one team sits unblemished at the top, the number one RIT Tigers. With this being the first D3 podcast of the season, RIT seemed like a good place to start. I talked to head coach Jay Kuhn about the early season success and what they learned from their run to the championship game last year, and assistant coach Sean Wilkins about the innovative and efficient offense he's helped groom for the Tigers. We wrap up with a fan perspective, talking to former player David Burke, a member of Kuhn's Goons, a.k.a. the Legion of Kuhn, a.k.a. Kuhn and Friends, a group of loyal supporters and alumni who come out to cheer on the Tigers and their esteemed coach. I apologize for the tardiness in getting the D3 podcast off the ground this season, but now that we've started, I'll aim to get you a new episode out each week, and on weeks that I can, I'll double up with other interesting guests. If you're starved for D3 content, make sure to read Inside Lacrosse contributor Ken Stockman's weekly D3 notebooks, and go to the new mobile-friendly scoreboard on InsideLacrosse.com for scores and stats for all of the men's D3 action. Follow me on Twitter at Zach Babbo, that's at ZACHBABO, no spaces, and at Inside Lacrosse, at @inside_lacrosse, for updates about the podcast and other D3 coverage. Now, after a long wait, enjoy the first edition of the 2014 Inside Lacrosse D3 podcast. Okay, the Inside Lacrosse Division III podcast is now joined by Jay Kuhn, the coach of the number one RIT Tigers. Coach Kuhn, I was able to run into you guys when you were down here in Baltimore this past week, playing two games at Johns Hopkins. Before we get into the games, I'm just kind of curious about, you know, what was maybe the thought of bringing the guys down to the Baltimore area on spring break? Particularly, I mean, you guys played Colby and Williams, so you weren't necessarily playing, you know, like local teams or something of the like. But I had heard a little bit about it might have been tied to the fact that since the Final Four and everything is down here this year, that maybe you want to familiarize your guys with the trip to Baltimore and all that, so that if you were in the position to make that trip later in May, you know, nothing's particularly foreign to them. But I'd just like to hear a little about what, you know, what the idea was behind coming to Baltimore and maybe how you thought, you know, the week went or what you guys even did while you were down here for a week.
Yeah, I mean, certainly familiarizing yourself is part of it, but certainly not the ultimate reason why we went. Number one is to get out of Rochester for a little while, you know, try to get into some better weather, although it didn't cooperate very well, you know, and with playing Clarkson before we left, it's kind of tough to go anywhere further south. You know, so as far as who we played, it was more just finding a few teams that matched up and had games available in the area. And, you know, lo and behold, those Chinescheck schools fit the bill. And, you know, certainly both great programs and you know, coming out of NESCAC, which is a great league, we you know, we're very open to the idea of playing them. So, I mean, that's really the reason, you know, we wanted to just, you know, not sit on campus all week and go down somewhere and hopefully take advantage of some weather.
Do you think the guys got anything extra out of, you know, coming down here, kind of a bit more of that closed environment of just being with the team for a week and mostly, you know, just practicing, staying in hotels,
yeah,
all that stuff? And even, you know, maybe just something out of a, just kind of a particular enjoyment out of playing on a field like Homewood or something like that?
No, exactly. You know, the guys, it's a bonding trip every year. I mean, you're sharing space. You're with each other quite a bit throughout the day. You don't have any other responsibilities other than, you know, practice and getting ready for the games. You know, the guys are enjoying meals together, a few team meals. And, you know, certainly a bonding experience. And, you know, that's part of the trip as well. I mean, we've got plenty of away trips this year. So hopefully we're getting plenty of bonding. And, but Homewood Field is fantastic, you know, certainly another perk to the trip. You know, playing in the Carrier Dome earlier this year was a special, both special games for us. And, you know, then to suit up on Homewood for a couple games, I think, you know, two of the more prestigious venues in all of lacrosse. And, you know, hopefully the guys got a feel for that and understand that. You know, we went over to the Hall of Fame and, went through their bit, and you know, the guys got the full look at things. And you know, we're always trying to better these guys, both as players and as people. And you know, I think giving them experiences like that is doing nothing but helping them, you know, personally as well.
In some ways, it seems like this may have been a bit of a memorable season in terms of, you know, you guys, this is kind of a unique trip or an interesting trip down here. You get to play games at Homewood. And you mentioned, you know, these two big games, two big wins for you guys in the Carrier Dome. You know, one against Cortland where just kind of a good end-to-end kind of win. And another of, you know, just a really epic comeback against Stevenson. I mean, I guess I'll start maybe since it was a little further away, the Stevenson game. Can you talk a little bit about that game and just, it was a very buzzworthy game afterwards with just this four goals in less than 2 minutes and the stick checks and all that stuff going back and forth at the end into overtime. I mean, what was it like to kind of be a part of, you know, a game like that?
Pretty amazing. Not a part of those games too often. I mean, I can think of two in my short career that would, you know, kind of rival that game. You know, one being the quarterfinals when I was coaching at UMass, we played Hofstra down at Stony Brook. And in that game, we were down, I believe, 6 goals with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter and came back to win to move on to the school's first ever Final Four. You know, so that game was pretty amazing in itself, just the comeback that we made on a short period of time. The other one, unfortunately, I was on the other end of the stick, and it was a NAS RIT game when I was coaching at NAS, I want to say maybe in 2002. We were up, I want to say, either, I think it was 9 goals in the second half, and we ended up losing the game in regulation. It was a total debacle. You know, then on both sides of the stick there, we were pretty fortunate to come away with a win against Stevenson. They're a good group, solid group end to end. And, we did what we had to do to get the win. You know, undescribable as far as how it finished. I don't know if I've ever seen 4 goals in a minute 37, and that's pretty remarkable, for anybody. But the venue was fantastic, you know, especially versus teams like that. And, you know, like we discussed before, we do want to get in those sort of situations in those environments and see how the guys react and, you know, test them a little bit. You know, I thought, again, looking back to last year's championship game, I thought we were a bit starry-eyed at the beginning of the game and we're trying to fix that issue. You know, and I thought we did a good job of that in both those contests. Particularly against Cortland, I thought we came in comfortable and confident, and you know, our leaders did a good job.
Does a win like that Cortland win, is it at all affirming in terms of, you know, Cortland is obviously a real power in Division III, and particularly with the regionality of the way brackets and all break down, you know, in the north, it can kind of, you know, much like teams have to kind of go through Salisbury often to get to the southern end of the bracket, you know, teams have to go through Cortland to get to the northern end of the bracket. So being able to, you know, to get another win against them, a regular season win, you know, I mean, is that a nice measuring stick for a program in the course of a season of kind of feeling like, okay, you get those big regional wins and you kind of get a sense of maybe where you belong or how good or not you can be?
Yeah, try not to use it as a measuring stick, so to speak. It's a huge win. It's a very important win, you know, in terms of, you know, postseason, if we're in the postseason. So, you know, yeah, I completely agree with you that the playoff run is going to go through Cortland, New York, one way or another. They're just that good of a program. You know, so the win early in the season, it was great. You know, it was nice to beat those guys, period. Doesn't matter if it's by 1 or 5 or 8 or whatever. Just getting the W against those guys is a great win for us. You know, but still the same mentality. You know, I think the getting to the championship day is gonna run through the Dragons. So gotta have some respect there. They're gonna be ready to go come later in the season. I have no doubts about that. But yeah, certainly good for the guys to affirm their confidence and I try not to use it as a measuring stick, but, you know, the guys certainly need to maintain their confidence, and I thought that was a good way to do that.
Does that kind of feel like it's building into a pretty fun non-conference rivalry for you guys? I mean, with the implications and all, for postseason stuff and all that, and just generally, I mean, you guys played two really great games last year. This year, while the game may have not been as close per se, it was in a really great venue like the Dome. I mean, and you just get the feeling that this is going to be one of those things that, you know, for the next handful of years, maybe you're going to see a lot of Cortland and RIT going back and forth, maybe.
There's no doubt about it that it's turning into a rivalry. I mean, I want to say, in thinking back, I think this was the seventh time we played since I've been here. Maybe the sixth, I forget. But they blew us out one time by 5 or 6 goals, and every other contest was decided by one goal, maybe overtime, maybe in regulation. But I think 5 of those contests were by one goal. And then, you know, we happened to be able to pull away on them this time. But, yeah, there's no doubt it's been back and forth. And they've got the better of us a majority of those times. So, again, it's I don't know if it's fun, but it's certainly going to be a rivalry and a battle every time we step on the field.
In some ways, does that Stevenson game feel like it's becoming a bit of a rivalry too? You know, North-South one in a way. I mean, while it doesn't necessarily feed into as much of a, you know you're going to pit heads in the playoffs early, or that it has much of a regional power thing. I mean, you guys have, in 3 years here, you two have played 3 really great games here, and particularly, you know, with the championship stage of one, and then the other two kind of having some interesting gamesmanship things going back and forth with overtime periods and stick checks and the like. I mean, what does it feel like is building out of that kind of a meetup every year, it seems?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels like it's going in that direction. They've got the better of us, so, you know, we've beaten them once out of 4 tries, so, you know, if it's going to be a rivalry, I think, you know, we're going to have to hold up our end of the bargain here and make sure that it's a quality game each time out. But yeah, I think it's got those qualities. You know, we have talked about continuing the game year in and year out. I think it's a great early season game, you know, kind of getting the season rolling. You know, it's, you know, especially playing them in the championship, I think that kind of breeds that competitiveness with both groups, especially when you open up the next year with them. I think it automatically breeds some sort of rivalry there or competitive nature. You know, the gamesmanship, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. You know, we're trying to run a clean program here and respectful program, and, you know, we do want to win too. So, you know, I think it was a call that worked in our favor, you know, that one time, but who knows what will happen next time out. You never know, especially with that game.
You know, kind of getting into maybe a bit of the psychology of a sideline or what have you, I mean, what was it like, or what do you say to your team when you're down by 4 goals with less than 2 minutes left, and you know, you're trying to come back? I mean, I don't know how much you even can sit there and have to sell to yourself the idea of we can or can't win this game at that point, or if you're looking at the guys in the huddle and maybe feeding off of them as much as they're feeding off of you. I mean, what's that like to kind of keep, you know, to be down like that and then start to get the guys going, and then every time you're chipping away to kind of keep going, wow, we might be doing this.
Well, that was kind of the feeling. I mean, in that huddle and the timeout, I mean, I think there was probably some doubts in the huddle, but at the same time, I think that once we broke the huddle, the group was confident that, you know, we could get a goal and start to run. You know, in that sort of situation, things just have to happen exactly the right way to pull off the victory. You know, win a key face off. Obviously, the stick check comes into play. You know, you got to bury balls. The goalie could easily come up with one of those saves, and the outcome's different. You know, their kid goes and shoots the ball. You know, somewhat of a mistake on their part, if you ask me, but in the heat of the moment, the kid had a clear lane to the goal, and if he buries it, you know, the game's probably over then too. So, you know, again, we're pretty fortunate to come away with the win. But at no point did the guys show any sort of, emotion that they were giving up. I mean, they were going to fight and claw to the end, and talking about believing in the huddle and finishing the game and so on. So I was happy to see that with the guys and certainly with the outcome.
Does a game like that, instill all this kind of confidence for later in the season, or, you can have that in your back pocket later in the season that you can be in a game? I mean, obviously you never want to be trailing by four going into the last minute or two of play, but you know that later in the year, if you're down by a goal or two late in the game, your guys have been there before. They have confidence in themselves. They can do it. And so there's a certain kind of, maybe memory you hope you can rely on, at least for the feeling of this isn't that big of a deal. We know how to get this done kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of peeked through in the St. John Fisher game. I mean, we were tied 6-6 with that group. And, we had to have another four-goal run in the fourth quarter to pull it off. It's already come up. Certainly we don't want to be in those situations where, we're down or tied late in the game. But unfortunately, this is lacrosse, and that's going to happen, and sticking together and believing you can do it and continuing to stick to the game plan and work hard is something we preach all the time. And hopefully that's, kind of shining through in those situations. Again, you need great leaders too in those situations. And we've been fortunate to get those. It's reared its head already. We a few years ago, we had a similar situation where we had, I think, four or five games that we were down by five goals during the game and had come back and won. It was the year that we were undefeated on the regular season. I think we had four regular season games that we came back from five down and won the game, which is pretty amazing in itself. And I joked about it. I said, I certainly don't want to get back into that habit. I'll be either gray or bald very quickly.
We've talked about, kind of the way your team has this penchant for scoring. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you average more than 16 goals a game. But the one thing that I think at times maybe gets overlooked in the team is how you guys play on defense. I mean, yeah, you're going to give up goals when you play a high transition style and all that kind of stuff. But you guys play a very solid, active defense. You seem to kind of push a lot in terms of getting on people's hands, and you really excel at trying to get the ball off the ground and get up and go. I mean, I know transition is a big part of importance for your team. Can you talk about what you see as your defensive system or philosophy and what you try and do to cultivate that and make it as strong as it can be?
Yeah, I mean, we put together a game plan each week, but it changes a little bit here and there, but we try to stick to the basics and stick to the system. I don't think we're a huge takeaway type team, not necessarily like a Stevenson. Those guys are very high pressure and throwing a lot of takeaway type checks. And I think the guys have to think and have a good mental game with the way that we play, who we slide into, who we not slide into, working through picks, stuff like that. I mean, game in and game out, we're making adjustments and, we certainly want to get the ball up and out as quick as possible. And I think that's been a huge reason why we're winning games and scoring so much. If you look down our stat sheet, I mean, our defensive midfield, including our LSMs, have quite a few goals and points. Yeah, I think that's a huge part of, our not only our defense, but our team. It's fun. It's a fun way to play. I believe it's the best way to play, and the guys have embraced that. Our defense needs work still. I mean, there's a lot of criticism about our defense out there in the media or whatever. I agree with some of it. We need to tighten up our defensive play. Yes, we put ourselves at risk by playing fast, but, we still need to tighten up. Our defense last year was pretty tight, probably the best we've had, and we didn't lose too many guys. So there's no excuse. We need to do a better job.
One of the things that really impressed me with when I saw you guys at Homewood was how well all, you know, I mean, you mentioned the some of the point totals that defensive midfielders and LSMs have, and in general, how well your poles kind of handle the ball. I mean, are there certain things you do in practice in terms of drill work or anything like that to try and get it so those guys are all very comfortable handling and put, you know, running through traffic, making good decisions, and being mm-hmm. good with the ball in terms of good shooting, good scooping, you know, all that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm. I mean, first and foremost, you got to get the right kids in your program. I mean, you know, you got to kind of recruit guys that have a bit of an offensive mind. You know, even though they're defensive oriented, they need to have an offensive mind. And we're fortunate, you know, we have two or three LSMs that are very offensive minded. Matty Hossick is very talented kid. He's been playing through an injury as well. So, you know, he's doing a fantastic job. You know, and we knew that as a freshman last year, we thought he was our best guy. You know, he's able to put the ball on the ground a bit, and he's just unbelievable off the ground. And J.D. Hall, a freshman coming in this year, I mean, he's doing, I guess, he's been exceeding our expectations. I knew he had an offensive mind. I mean, he was the leading scorer for his high school program, leading midfielder. His high school program, he played man up at Arapahoe, you know, state champions of Colorado. So, you know, we knew he had an offensive mind, and he fits right into our system pretty well. You know, and our D-middies aren't really D-middies. I mean, Brad Gillies started attack for us last year. You know, and Matt Kiefus, I mean, if we wanted to run him at offensive midfield, we would have no reservations. He's very capable. So, you know, I think it's about personnel. It's also about drilling and repping. We do ground balls every single day of practice. We do a ton of transition every single day in practice. So, you know, just getting the guys out there and putting them in those situations, I think helps them get comfortable, you know, getting up and down the field.
You know, you were a great goalie at NAS, and I noticed that, you know, before games, you're out there warming up the goalies on game day. That seems a little unique to me. I guess I don't often see a head coach being the guy warming up goalies. I guess just tell me a little about that. But on top of that, too, I guess one of the things that's interesting is that you often see coaches, it seems like the positions they played or the skill sets they had become kind of particular points of pride on their teams. Is that something for you where you know, being a great goalie yourself, you take a little extra care and time with your goalies? I mean, you guys have two really solid ones this year anyway in Anthony DeLillo and Pat Johnston. But, you know, it just seems like that's maybe a particular area of interest for you, you know, particularly seeing you out there shooting around and warming up the guys before games.
Yeah, I mean, I work with the goalies every day. You know, we put in about 30 to 35 minutes a day with the goalies. You know, we get them out a little bit early and keep working with them through the guy's stretch. And, you know, doing added 5 minutes when they're doing stick work or whatever it may be. So I don't know if it's added pride. I just think it's a position that you need to take some time and make sure they get some attention. Too many programs out there, I think, neglect to give their goalies the work they deserve and the work they need. You know, as far as game day is concerned, I just want to make sure they're comfortable. To throw, you know, an assistant coach out there or, you know, a player or whatever it may be, you know, it may suffice, but I think there's a level of comfort when I'm out there and I, you know, get them in their routine and, you know, let them see the ball. And, you know, I just think there's a level of comfort there. Would I prefer not to do it game day? Sure. I'd rather, you know, kind of relax and focus on game day. But, you know, again, it's important that we have our goaltenders ready to go. And if I got to warm them up game day, no problem. I'll take care of it. So I guess they're no more important than anybody else. But since that's, I guess, you know, one of my expertise, I'm going to make sure that I put the time in for those guys and give them the attention they deserve.
And so, Coach, you guys are 9-0, and you're heading into league play now. Or, well, you have a game against Geneseo today, and then you're heading into league play after that. I mean, What maybe do you take from the season that you know you bring into league play now, or does emphasis or anything like that kind of shift as you enter into league play and in a Liberty League that I think a lot of people thought was going to be competitive, but maybe weren't sure who were the other teams that were going to excel, you know, other than you guys, and I think you've seen a couple of surprising things, Union in particular, maybe kind of jump up and look like they're going to be, you know, some tough outs for you guys through league play.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I don't know if it's as big of a surprise for me as it is for maybe the rest of the lacrosse world. I mean, Coach Wareham does a fantastic job. You know, we knew they were going to be competitive. I mean, they're certainly probably exceeding expectations. But, again, not surprising with Coach Wareham. It's what he's known for. You know, he gets his guys ready to go. You know, he's got some talented kids and a lot to work with. So, no, not a huge surprise for me. You know, St. Lawrence, you know, every year they're competitive. They're right up there and doing a good job again this year. You know, no surprise there to me either. You know, RPI is a program, I don't know if you know this, but we're 0-2 at RPI. We have not beaten them since I've been here at their field. So we're traveling down there this Saturday 0-2 against them. So again, does not surprise me one bit that, you know, they're having a great year and their defense is playing real well. They've had a great defense every year. So, you know, again, Clarkson will bounce right back. I know they're a good unit. You know, we played well. They lost their faceoff guy mid game and that really hurt them. So I'm sure they'll be back and ready to go if we see them again. So again, you know, it's a great league. I just don't know if everyone else understands that. We're going to have our hands full. We have a lot of good games left on our schedule, including today. I mean, Geneseo, we reminded the guys that Geneseo was 0-6 2 years ago, and five or six of those games were one-goal losses, and we played them to a one-goal game. You know, not much different than today. They're 2-4 with four one-goal losses, so they're going to come ready to go. And if we don't, we're going to be in for a dogfight. You know, we've got NAS on the schedule, another huge non-league game, a rivalry game, plus all those league contests. So no cakewalks for us. We're going to have to earn our wins.
And, Coach, I guess I'll kind of get you out on something of a goofier kind of aspect. But I've heard that there's a fairly dedicated group of alumni, or mostly alumni, that try and come out to games when they can that are known as Coons Goons, I guess. What do you know of this group, and what's it like to have the rather enthusiastic bunch following you guys for games?
Yeah, I think they changed their name to the Legion of Coon. So they're fantastic. They're awesome. They're a lot of our recent alums that you know, played for me 1 or 2 years ago, 3 years ago. You know, Craig Nairn and Dave Burke have been fantastic. You know, those guys rally the troops, and where it came from, I have no idea. You know, It's pretty candid. It's pretty hilarious during the games. There are all kinds of different chants going on, you know, but awesome support. I mean, I can't thank those guys enough for continuing to support not only me, but the program, and, you know, making it to some of our away games and to a ton of our home games. And you know, certainly the championship last year was an unbelievable showing of alumni support. So, you know, we're just thankful to those guys. But again, yeah, pretty candid, hilarious. I don't know where they come up with that stuff, but let them go with it.
All right, well, Coach, thanks a lot for talking. And, you know, good luck against Geneseo today and as you go through league play. And I'll hope to run into you guys and the Legion of Coon down in Baltimore come the end of May here. So.
Yeah, I'd like to do the same. We'll see what happens.
Thanks a lot, Coach. Take care.
Okay, take care, Zach.
All right, the Inside Lacrosse Division III podcast is now joined by RIT assistant coach Sean Wilkins. Coach Wilkins, you know, what's really probably stood out to about RIT in the past few seasons, particularly the past two, is how prolific of an offensive team you've been. It, just a lot of goals scored, a lot of ball movement, and a lot of what winds up looking like easy goals sometimes scored in a given game. And you know, you're kind of the guy charged with building a lot of this offensive system there. I mean, can you tell me a little bit about what you've built out of what you've got there at RIT?
I think it's a system that has kind of evolved over the 4 or 5 years I've been at RIT, and it's a bunch of kids that are just unselfish, and we've kind of I think we've recruited some pretty skilled kids that this style of offense they kind of feed off of. And the fact that, we assist on so many goals and, we are so unselfish, it's kind of an attribute to the guys that we brought in, and they kind of bought into the system. With that being said, I think, one of our goals every game is to score from prime scoring areas, we call them. Not your traditional 12-yard runners or your kind of dodging from X, fading away from the goal. We always like to face the goal when we're shooting. I like to, 7-8 yards and in. I think that's where you see higher shooting percentages on some of the best teams in the country is when you get, those prime scoring areas. Maybe it's my box background, growing up playing box across in Toronto. Growing up, you always say, you got to get in the paint to be effective when you shoot.
I was going to say, one of the things that really, impressed me about when I saw you guys down here in Baltimore was how many goals you guys seem to score almost off 2 feet or so off the crease, or guys almost being kind of hid by the pipe, and you look like, they're a foot away from the goal, but there's almost no angle, and yet they still squeak a goal. And I mean, are there certain things you guys do to try and really emphasize those? You talk about scoring areas. I mean, in practice, are you trying to get guys to do a lot of shooting drills from certain areas or the like? What kind of ways do you cultivate those skills?
I think we do a fair amount of shooting. We don't do a ton of shooting. To be honest with you, I think we just have some really talented players. I probably would put, the top our attackmen, some of the best in tight finishers. Guys that, have played some box across, the guys that are used to scoring in tight. I try to put them in situations that they're in Excel. Those guys, if I put them up top, I don't think they're downhill guys. They're not going to run by and score. So we try to put those guys down low, and we just try to, instill in them, move your feet, try to backdoor your guy and don't stop moving. And I think that's hard for defenses to cover is when everyone's moving around and you end up with those layups because guys get lost in the shuffle. It's not traditional. It's not your, there's always a guy that acts, two guys in the wings, one guy's clearing through. It changes every time. And it's not predictable. I think that's the biggest thing is, our guys have bought in that our offense isn't predictable. You can't scout it 1 week and say, this is what they're going to do next week or next game. It changes every time. And, our guys are pretty creative and we allow them to do that. I think that's what makes, it's hard to stop, is that type of, and putting those guys in those skill sets. We have some good sweep guys, but we try to put our talented finishers as close to the goal as possible.
You can kind of hear the Canadian accent that you have, and the roster has a lot of guys that seem to come from that kind of a background, Canadian, some box experience. How much of the kind of offense you guys run is one of those things of a coach looking at the team and going, this is a system that will work well with these players? Or how much of it was maybe the other way of realizing you wanted to cultivate systems like this, so you tried to acquire players that had, that kind of a skill set and could be conducive to those kind of systems?
I think we kind of, to be honest with you, I think we kind of stumbled upon it. Probably at the beginning of last year, we were running traditional stuff before our first Stevenson game. And, Coach Kuhn had mentioned, listen, why don't you take what you're really good at? As far as, we used to run a lot of set plays and stuff like that, and your traditional downhill stuff and invert, and, typical stuff that you're going to see day to day. So I think what happened was, we ended up figuring out, we got some pretty talented kids. Let's try to tweak this a little bit and put our guys in proper positions in their skill sets. You know, if a dodging guy's a dodger, he's usually up top or on the wings. Finishers are down low. And I think I don't think we went out there and recruited those type of players. I think that it's kind of just cultivated, and that's the way we've ended up. And now, you know, we are looking for recruits to fit those spots. You know, so we're looking for a real good kid, a two-handed kid that can dodge both ways. And then we're also looking for, you know, for you losing a righty in tight attack, and we try to bring another one in. So I think now that the system has evolved, we definitely recruit, you know, to fit those type of situations.
Have you seen those kind of skill sets trickle down in the past few years in terms of, you know, your front end of the roster, the guys that get on the field a lot? You know, obviously probably your more skilled guys that do well in those kind of systems. But after you run this kind of an offensive practice for two or three seasons, you see those kind of skill sets and decision-making and all that trickle down to guys even on the back end of the roster that tend to do more of a scout team or practice role and maybe don't even see the field as much on game day.
I think so. I think by, you know, we try to integrate those guys a little bit every day so they can play with our number ones. And Coach Kuhn does a pretty decent job of mixing guys in, especially at the beginning of the year. Maybe not so much once we're full season. But I think we try to get those guys in pick and roll situations, moving off ball. And a lot of it is just watching. And those guys, you know, they may not pick it up right away. But, you know, I definitely think it's a trickle-down effect. You know, we kind of, like I said before, you know, we try to put guys in the right situations. You know, we're not going to force a guy that's, you know, I think a lot of teams get kind of complacent and, you know, putting guys like, yeah, you know, this team you're going to dodge the entire game. And maybe he's not a dodging guy, you know. So I think that's the biggest component of it is, you know, the younger guys are kind of feeling their way out and they're trying to find their role. And what that is, and whether it's a finisher in tight, or you know, a guy that's dodging from up top, or wings, or I think those guys are kind of taking that role. And as far as you know, yeah, I am really good at this, so this is what I'm going to try and implement within our system that we're already currently running.
While certain guys kind of gravitate towards roles, is the idea too at all that you know that maybe your top 6, 8, 10 kind of offensive players are slightly interchangeable in terms of how they work on the field? I mean, when you watch the offense run, you don't necessarily always get the feel of, okay, that guy's definitely a middie or that guy's definitely a crease attack man or something like that.
Right.
There tends to be a little bit more of, you know, maybe this guy was a middie, but he's just as comfortable attacking from the wing than you know, up top, or he's easy to, you know, to go back behind and invert. I mean, how much is that kind of by design and adds to how difficult it is to scout you guys and the like?
Yeah, I think by design we do that a lot. I mean, we really try to put guys in those situations that they're in Excel, and you know, we do have interchangeable guys that can play attack, play midi. To be honest with you, I mean, we can put 6 guys out there, and you know, it's not so much attack and midfield. I mean, it's what, you know, we kind of take what the defense gives us, and we put them in pressure situations that are unusual and that they don't normally see on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, the game changes and, you know, we do have some guys that bump back and forth. We've got some injuries right now. The attack position, you know, our first team All-American, Jack Hurston, you know, he hasn't played since Cortland. So, you know, we got some guys that are filling some roles, but, you know, Jack comes back, I can always see an attack and bumping up the midfield and running through the box type of deal. But I think it's not so much, you know, attack midfield. I think it's a cohesive unit. It's like, you know, 6 guys playing together, working off ball, and kind of, you know, continually moving their feet.
Kind of speaking of one guy who you know, built into a role and was a new addition this year, you know, Casey Jackson has really come on and just he's putting up good numbers. I think he's averaging almost 4 goals a game. I mean, from the 2 games I caught you guys down at Hopkins, I mean, he just has stretches where it seems like the goals he gets, the plays he makes look very effortless. And,
right.
And you know, that's obviously, I guess, it speaks to the kind of skill he brings. I mean, can you tell me about maybe a little bit about how Casey ended up at RIT this year and what he brings to you guys, you know, as a program and as an offensive player?
Well, basically, you know, Casey, he was at ASA Community College. And most people don't even know where that is, but You know, he had a lot of Division I looks and some things fell through the cracks for him eligibility-wise that he couldn't get his 2 years of eligibility in Division I. He only had one left, but he had two in Division III. You know, essentially he kind of came on the table pretty late. His coach had contacted us and said, you know, take a look. And, you know, I'm familiar with a lot of the players out west and the coaches, and they gave, you know, I had a couple phone calls, and, you know, everyone had pretty good things to say about him. He's definitely a kid that, you know, I think, you know, he's a game changer, but he's also the recipient of, you know, what our midfield does. Our midfield gets, you know, is very hard to cover. Most people, you know, a lot of our glory comes from our attackmen, but because those guys are, you know, getting layups and one-touch goals and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot to be said about guys that can finish in tight. You know, I think it's a skill, and those guys are doing a great job. But I think our midfield is probably the dangerous part of our team that people understand is they're creating these guys for layups. And Casey, no doubt, is, you know, he's only touching the tip of the iceberg of his game. You know, he's a guy who didn't have a lot of field lacrosse experience. So, you know, he's working. He's still a work in progress, and that's the scary part is, you know, he's getting 4 or 5 goals a game just on skill alone, and he's still learning the field lacrosse game. So, you know, I think as he goes throughout the year, I think he's only going to get better and better, which is, you know, if he keeps working hard at it and kind of practicing what we tell him to do, I think, you know, he could be up there, you know, with some of the best players that play at RIT.
Yeah, you talk about kind of his limited field experience, and it's interesting in terms of, you know, I'm looking up a little bit about you, Coach, and you had experience playing in the NLL, in the MLL, and you played hockey at RIT, and, you know, all those kind of things, I guess, probably lend themselves to interesting points of view on how to play certain systems or styles. You know,
right.
How much of that, I mean, I can almost get into those little elements separately, but, you know, can you tell me a little bit maybe about your experience in the MLL and the NLL and what you take away from that, that you bring into philosophies of coaching or style of play at RIT?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was with the Nighthawks for about 5 or 6 years, and, you know, the Rattlers off and on, you know, practice roster and stuff for 2-3 years. And, you know, I'd have to say, you know, they're similar in that time. There was a lot of Nighthawks and Rattlers playing together, you know, Chris Schiller and John Grant, and, you know, Steve Hoare, a bunch of those guys playing both sports back and forth. And really what I just took out of it, I just learned every day and kind of, you know, playing with those great players and having, you know, we had some great coaches, and you won an NLL championship, an MLL championship, and kind of how to win and how to win the right way. And I guess coaching philosophies are a little different at the professional level, because ultimately, you know, those guys are so great that, you know, you can put X's and O's in, but at the end of the day, those guys kind of win championships, you know, they're such talented players alone. But the one thing I probably took from, you know, those guys are, you know, kind of we try to take that same skill set of a professional level and put it in Division III. I mean, we're asking our guys, Coach Dutton is our other assistant. He graduated from Cornell, played with me for the Nighthawks and Rattlers. And the first couple of practices, like, Wilkie, you're kind of putting in, you know, you're putting in professional systems. You're not putting in, you know, Division III usual systems. Yeah. And maybe that's unknowingly, that's what I was doing, was kind of implementing, you know, not a higher end style for Division III. I don't know how it was going to pan out or anything like that. You know, but I know, you know, first couple of practices, Coach Dutton was like, wow, you know, we did a lot of stuff for the Rattlers, and there's a lot of indoor similarities with the Nighthawks and, you know, and so forth. So if anything, that's probably where I'd sum it up.
You know, a lot of your players probably have a touch of that indoor background, but is that something else that you guys try and emphasize in practice or in preseason preparation of getting the guys into, I mean, particularly, you know, you're in Rochester, the weather at times can be quite lacking. Do you try and find box type setups or the like for guys to play in to get those kind of, you know, emphasize the aspects of that game that you want to cultivate into the regular offense, to work on stick skills, to those kind of things?
We actually don't. Surprisingly, we don't, you know, make specific days where we're going to go play 5-on-5 or stuff like that. we do a lot of stick work stuff throughout practice. And you know, we kind of implement some of that stuff. We do a ton of transition stuff. I'd say 75% of our practice are transition. And I think by doing that, you kind of get that feel of an indoor game where you're going up and down, in tight space, time and space. You know, when you're in transition, everything happens so fast. And we try to play at a fast paced level every day of practice. And I think, you know, rather than sitting down and playing 6-on-6, we'd rather play transition and let guys feel it out. We do some 2-on-2s and stuff like that with pick and rolls. And I, you know, once a week I'll probably roll a ball out and we'll just play 4-on-4 inside the box. You know, although we're upstate, I mean, we've only been inside about 7 or 8 times. So we go outside as much as possible. So when we're out there, you know, we kind of, you know, we have an indoor field house as well. So it's not like we are constructed for a practice to be, in the gym. So, but we do a little bit, but I think the transition part is where we really kind of feed off of that and kind of, you know, time and space type of deal.
You know, amongst that kind of idea of the transition heavy stuff, you know, are there certain benchmarks statistically you guys try and use as metrics of how well you're operating in terms of, you know, I've heard certain coaches say, okay, I want to make sure we have this many shots in a given game or this many, or you're looking for a certain percentage of assisted goals maybe, or, you know, really, you know, win the ground ball margin by a certain amount, things like that.
Right. Yeah, well, at the beginning of the year, our captains and the team set their goals. You know, ground balls over 40, or you know, lesser greater than the opposing team of 12. So we do have a lot of those goals. You know, the guys have created some pretty lofty goals on offense. They want to score, you know, 14, 15 goals a game. How we do that, I think we just kind of breed it in selfishness. I think that's the biggest, we're not like, you know, we have to assist on this many goals. I think it just kind of comes and happens. Transition, we want to be plus or, you know, plus whoever we're playing in transition. So if we score 4, you know, we're hoping to only give up 3. I think that's, you know, is that, do we talk about it a lot? No. But, you know, you don't want to give up a ton of transition. As you see, you know, the way we play is kind of like, you know, if you fall asleep for a couple of minutes, you could be down 4 or 5 goals just because of our transition game. So it's, you know, are they goals? Yes. Are they talked about? Yes. You know, we don't try to, you know, ingrain like the assists or anything like that. I think we kind of just stick to goals against, goals for, and ground balls and you know, like, plus or minus transition ratio.
So we've talked about, you know, all these kind of different influences in the game. And another thing I mentioned a little bit earlier, and I'd like to, you know, kind of dive into a little bit more with you because of how a bit unique it is with the RIT background in particular, is your hockey background. You know, you played both hockey and lacrosse at RIT. I mean, I guess before we get into your career particularly, you know, from that hockey experience, are there certain things that, you know, you can look at and say these are there are elements or styles of the game in hockey or you know, principles of that kind of a game that you brought in and applied to lacrosse at all, maybe? Or
yeah, I think so. I think you know, playing two sports at RIT, you know, it was one of those, you know, I got to be parts of both programs, so you get the best of both and you get the worst of both. I think what I really took from playing hockey at RIT is, you know, in 4 years, we only lost 7 games or 8 games. And I think it was that belief that we were going to win on every night. I mean, the 1 year, I think we were 27-1 and lost in the championship. You know, the senior class I graduated, I think, you know, I think we were like 68-7. So what I took from hockey, I think, is a winning attitude. You know, you got to learn how to win. Winning just not going to come overnight. You got to work at it, and no matter how talented you are, I think that's kind of what I took from as far as the bigger picture. The smaller picture is more in lacrosse is understanding ebb and flow of the game and understanding when to push transition and when not. In hockey, you get that a lot when there's a lot of momentum changes. You know, I think hockey it happens more than lacrosse. Now, if you can regulate those momentum changes and put them in your favor more and stop their runs, I think you're going to come out on top in most games. I think that's probably the biggest thing in hockey is, you know, weather the storm per se and get, you know, just keep battling. You know, you may win a game 2-1 and, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to keep battling. You know, so they are similar in philosophies and coaching styles.
I guess, you know, kind of from there, I mean, it's you can't necessarily compare and contrast straight up, but just kind of interesting to me the unique situation that it must have been to play for both of those teams at RIT, because if I'm not mistaken, while the lacrosse team is Division III at RIT, the hockey team is Division I and competes with some other, you know, really big-time programs out there that you know, schools that other people know of from all other levels of sports. It just kind of curious, you know, what that kind of experience might have been like playing on these two almost different stratas of athletics while you're there and how both kind of fold into the athletic kind of canvas of RIT.
Well, actually, when I was there, it was in the transition period of Division I. We didn't actually go Division I until 2 years after I left. So we were still playing D3 hockey. So we were still in that kind of landscape of similar teams that not per se we were playing lacrosse, but, you know, we were playing the Norwiches and Plattsburghs and, you know, a lot of Wisconsin Stephen Points and the teams out there. But I think the philosophy, it's the same coaches as I was there. Wayne Wilson was still there. And I don't think that's changed much as far as the philosophy and kind of their day-to-day and what they do. But, you know, it was a unique experience. And, you know, I was pretty fortunate to step into that and play both, no doubt.
And I guess, Coach Joe, as you've kind of grown in more responsibility on the staff, I noticed from your bio, you know, that one of the things you're very well connected to or involved with is kind of the recruiting ends of RIT. You know, with recruiting being such a hot-button issue in lacrosse, can you tell me a little about how you've seen recruiting change at the D3 level over, you know, the about 4 or 5 years you've kind of been doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Division III is trying to, you know, kind of emulate what Division I is doing and getting out there and watching grade 10s and grade 11s and grade 12s. You know, in D3, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't really agree with it to a certain perspective. I mean, I think we're more, you know, we got to wait and see where the chips fall. You know, and there's no doubt we want to get out there and see some kids play, but you know, you could be spinning your tires, you know, chasing a grade 10 or a grade 11 when there's a perfectly good, you know, grade 12 kid out there that is pretty good that fell through the cracks. You know, I think D3, you know, we're trying to be like Division I, but to be honest with you, I don't know if that's the right route to go for Division III. You know, I'd rather have an older kid on a team that's more mature when he comes in, you know, bigger, stronger kid for Division III rather than – I don't think we can take as much risk as Division I as far as, you know, getting these commitments early in grade 11, grade 12. And, you know, they're on a different level than us. And I think by chasing them and what they're doing is – I don't think it's right. But, you know, it's to each his own and whatever is going to excel for your program and do well. I mean – we have several post-grad kids that come from the Hill Academy in Canada that, you know, these are great kids that just didn't pan out in other places and no one saw them. They're like, where'd you get this kid? And he's, you know, he was in post-grad playing elsewhere. You know, so I think there's something to be said about recruiting, you know, some older kids that fell through the cracks. That there's still some really good players out there that are extremely talented in grade 12, you know, their senior year and not have, you know, anywhere to go. You just got to get out there and find them. I don't need to rely on it. I think you really, if you're going to do it that way, you really have to, you know, keep your eye on the ball and make sure at least kids you're keeping in contact with and, you know, because it is late in the process. So
I guess to that end, you know, like last year you guys play until the championship game. I mean, how quickly after that game are you back out on the road and going out to scoop up talent again?
I think, you know, we'll probably take a week or 2 weeks off. You know, Coach Coon, he's a road warrior. He hits the road pretty hard. know, I don't hit the road as much as him, but I do. I watch a lot of games in the summer. I go up and watch probably 34 junior A games. You know, I'll go up and watch probably 5 a week when I'm up there. You know, and I do have some pretty decent connections with a lot of head coaches and general managers, and just kind of get their take on the landscape of junior A and junior B. And that's kind of been my niche. You know, I do attend UPLAX and some of the other stuff in late November. And there's still some really good kids out there in late November that don't have homes, and they're out there. So I think we're always recruiting. I don't think we're ever stopping. You know, I think, you know, this week alone, I've probably talked to, you know, a handful of kids this week. You know, if you want to be competitive every year, you really can't lose sight of, you know, you got to restock the cupboards. You know, you can't just, you know, be in the moment of the season and then, oh, we got to hit the road. I think recruiting is 365 days a year. If you want the kids you want, you really got to keep on the ball and keep in touch with these kids and not chase so many. Try to chase the ones you really want.
All right, well, Coach, thank you very much for giving me some time here to talk today, and hopefully, I guess I'll hope for your guys' sake that you're going on that recruiting trip in mid-June or so, which means you would have played, you know, third championship weekend, and that some people will be able to see you guys in Baltimore playing that game and get to watch how much fun it is to watch our offense operate, because it definitely is one of those units that, you know, can just be fun to lay back and just watch you guys do work. So.
All right, man, I appreciate it. I really do, and, you know, hopefully, if we're lucky enough and we keep working hard, I think, you know, we could be there. So thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Best luck going to the league play here, Coach. Take care.
Okay, Zach. Bye.
All right, in this RIT-themed version of the Inside Lacrosse Division III podcast, we've heard a lot about the different aspects of the program, and one of the pieces I was kind of intrigued by was Coon's Goons, or the Legion of Coon, as they may be going by now. On now we have David Burke, who is a former player from RIT and a member of the fan support group here. David, I guess, can you just give me a feel of, well, first of all, I guess, do you guys go by Coon's Goons or the Legion of Coon these days?
I think, you know, either works.
I guess, you know, how did this group kind of come about, or where did you guys kind of get this clever name and everything?
I think, well, Legion of Coon came from, actually, I think it came from Richard Sherman, the cornerback from the Seahawks during the Super Bowl. He was doing Legion of Boom, and it kind of just spiraled off one night when we were out together after one of the games, just turned into Legion of Coon. But I guess Coon's Goon is, it's kind of hard to explain, but I guess the quick, easiest way to do it is just, you know, us alumni, you graduate and move on, and it's a way of calling, like, us ex-players, you know, we have so much love and respect for Coach Coon, and we support the team now, that it kind of just came across as Coon's Goons. You know, you go through a lot as a player and, you know, become, you know, brothers. Any lacrosse player can probably tell you that. You become brothers very quickly. So even though we've, you know, moved on and everything to our, you know, across the country, I guess you can kind of say Coon's Goons is just the continuation of the brotherhood and bond you create over the years playing lacrosse. And again, it's just a lot of support for Coach Coon and that coaching staff he has there.
I imagine, you know, the kind of number of the group might fluctuate a little bit depending on the day, you know, the game and all that. But, I mean, on a decent day, you know, about how many guys do you think you can bring out to a game to cheer on the team?
I think locally-wise, there's probably still a good 15 to 20 guys that are local that try to make it to games if they can. Some of the bigger games, like Stevenson game, we actually took everyone kind of converged back to Rochester, and we took a 50-passenger bus from RIT to Syracuse for the day, and we filled that thing completely up. So I think depending on how big a game it is, or if it's an opener or you know, playoffs, it will vary. But like for Stevenson, we had over 50 go from RIT, and we probably had another 25 to 30, you know, alumni, guys that didn't even play for Coach Coon, that just meeting him over the time, you know, over the last 5 years, want to support the program more, they come out as well. So, I mean, probably Stevenson, there was a lot more than a regular game.
I gather you guys got pretty loud there through the end of the Stevenson's game. Did it seem even louder, you know, being in a closed space like the Dome and everything?
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, I've gone to the games there growing up in the area. It's definitely in an atmosphere that was a lot different. But, yeah, it was definitely a lot louder than normal just because you're inside.
So, you know, I heard you guys have some interesting traditions, like some chants and the like. I mean, do you guys, you know, don, like, bring big banners or signs or anything, or, you know, got shirts or anything made up, or?
Yeah, there's some shirts that they got made up with, a raccoon face with a bandit across the front. that's part of, Coon and Friends. I don't know where that came from. I think it actually might have been from one of actually Coach Coon's friends that made them up, that we just started grabbing them. And then along the way, a Coach Coon cat just got started, and usually after goals, someone just starts yelling Coach Coon, and I guess everyone just kind of follows in suit.
Now, you guys played for Coach Coon in RIT, so, I mean, you have, I guess, more of a relationship. You're not just, you know, fans of him from the outside, but you're familiar with him. I mean, is it, you know, from your experience with him, I guess, is he kind of an easy coach to kind of support like this, to get excited about with the program? You know, I guess, you know, what's kind of the feeling of you guys with what he's done at RIT?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. His first year was mine and, you know, seven other seniors, you know, senior year. So we definitely were skeptical going in. But the minute, you know, we got to be around him, you know, he's very intense. He wants to win, which is great. But the way he does coach, he drives you, you know, he pushes you to your limits to be your best, you know, and there's different ways you can do that. And the way he does it doesn't come off as being, you know, it's all encouraging, no matter what you're doing, if you're working out or even if you're doing sprints, you know, it's all to make you better at the end of the day to better yourself as a player and as a team. So, I mean, that kind of mentality, the way his attitude was of, you know, family really, you know, pulled a lot of us together. And that's why I think even as it's moving on, we stay very close, which is great. You know, lifelong friends, you always have them.
I covered the Division III championship game last year in Philly, and, you know, RIT had a pretty healthy, you know, amount of alum and supporters and everything out there. You guys were real vocal during the game. I gather a good chunk of the Coons Goons made it down there. I mean, can you tell me a little bit about what that trip was like for you guys?
Yeah, it was a fun trip. You know, it was a great experience. The first time RIT's ever been there, so I think a lot of people, past players and even alumni came out for it. We had a huge tailgate. A lot of alumni, some of the older alumni, put on a big barbecue for a lot of people, which was great. We had a big, big, big tailgate. And I had a couple, you know, buddies I played with and move out west that literally flew in for the day, took the red eye in the morning and flew out the red eye at night just to be part of it. So it was definitely a great experience. You know, I hope it was, hoping more to come. So
I was going to say, if RIT can have another deep run, I gather you guys, you know, are going to make plans to make the trip down to Baltimore this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're so excited. Even if, no matter who plays in the national championship, I think a lot of us want to go back to Baltimore because we all think it's, you know, one of the best cities to have the tournament in, because you park on Friday and you walk everywhere for the whole week and no one has to worry about driving. So it's a great city to have it in. You can walk everywhere, and it's I think it's the best city to have it in. You know, having RIT playing in it this year would just make it another plus.
You know, I mean, you guys are tied to the program by being alumni and everything, but personally, as I kind of got to watch some RIT recently, the team can just be a fun team to watch play with how well they move the ball and just kind of how unselfish everything is. When you guys are out there cheering, I mean, do you ever kind of take a step back and just look and realize, boy, this team is a lot of fun to watch, too?
Oh, absolutely. We talk about it, you know, between texting, if it's group text or everything, as you're watching on live feed or even in person, everybody's just like, you know, they move the ball. The fact that, you know, Coach Wilkins has brought on some Canadians that, you know, definitely can handle the ball a little bit differently than Americans. Some of those guys can just sling the ball around and it's just second nature to them. You know, their offense of this year has been a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, there's a lot of their goalie play. They have a couple long pull middies that a lot of us are just like, wow, these kids are unbelievable, and they're young too. It's like, I think one of the biggest surprises at times is I think a couple of their players are freshman sophomores, and they're, you know, starting and contributing right off the bat, which is great to see.
And I guess now as the weather in upstate starts to make the turn, hopefully towards being a little nicer after a pretty rough winter, I gather you guys are going to hope getting bigger and bigger crowds out to games here?
Yeah, I think let's hope the weather breaks, you know. but it will help to get on the grass field. Usually, no matter what, like the last years, you know, I played in the last couple of years, once we get out onto the grass field, we tend to get a little bit bigger crowds just because there's a stand that can hold a couple thousand people instead of standing around a turf. So, I think the warmer weather should help get them a little bit more community support, not even just alumni.
All right, well, David, I mean, hopefully the upstate New York weather here takes a turn, though I lived up there for a while, too. I know after a couple of days of sunshine, you can suddenly get a blizzard, so hopefully you guys will be excused from that, and you can get yourself out there and then be nice and vocal for a handful more RIT games. And thanks a lot for talking to me for a little bit.
Thank you for the call.
All right, take care.